Abate la rimette dentro, esce Radu, porta vuota. Gol! Gol! Abbiamo battuto il gatto nero! Li abbiamo battuti tutti, Alessio! Grande Alessio! È bella la vita! Lava quella zolla, Alessio! Lava la quella zolla, Alessio!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. I'm joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
What's up, guys? I'm your host, Anthony Torgrud. You can find me on Twitter at Torgrud45. And we are joined once again by Madison.
Yeah, Anthony, you're also the co-host. But I am also a co-host, and I'm excited for this week's episode. We have some games to record or review. You guys can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Madison_DT.
Okay, and after that passive-aggressive start to this podcast, just before we dive into it, this show, as always, is brought to you by our friends over at Euro Fantasy League. If you haven't already, make sure to check out our Serie A Fantasy League. You can find out more details about this via the pinned tweet on our Twitter page. So, boys, let's get into it. It's been a while since we've had one of these, I think. But basically, we've got a couple of wins to recap, and it's been a really, really good week for the team. So, yeah, we'll start by taking a look at the win over Cagliari, 3-0 at San Siro. Obviously, recording this, we missed out last week, basically, due to a number of different reasons. So, we've got a couple to recap. But first of all, yeah, the win over Cagliari, 3-0 at San Siro. A good, comfortable win. Paqueta got on the score sheet. Piontek scoring once again, keeping his red-hot start alive. AJ, just nice to actually win a game at home comfortably that we were meant to, and you absolutely nailed your prediction in the preview.
I did, yeah. I said it was going to be 3-0. I was a little off because I said it was going to be a shish kebab Piontek hat trick, but he just got the one, and that's all right. The first goal, it looked like it was going to be a Suso goal, and then... did it hit the post or was it saved and then bounced off a defender and went in for
saved.
A goal? I can't remember.
He tipped it straight onto their captain, Cepitelli, and then it sort of looped in.
Cepitelli.
Yeah. So that was a lucky start, but sometimes in those kind of games I feel like you need a little bit of luck to get the first goal because they were obviously coming for a draw.
And with that though being said, if Cepitelli wasn't there, whatever his name is, if you go back and rewatch that goal, Piontek was right there getting ready to tap it in, so he could have had two.
Predatory,
but it's
instinct.
All right. Yeah, and something we've been missing. I don't know if anyone's been following Higuain over at Chelsea there, but he's still doing the same thing, which is, you know, hanging out about where the midfield should be and not where the striker should be. So it's nice to see a striker up front and actually being up front for once.
Yeah, I watched Chelsea against Man United tonight in the FA Cup. Mm-hmm. And it seems like they've got the same kind of problem as what he did at Milan because, you know, the service hasn't really been there because obviously Hazard's a world-class player and he kind of feels like he has to drag the team on his own. Higuain's movement's not there. You can tell he's still playing with very little confidence because he's come into a Chelsea team that's struggling and... obviously he's reunited with Sarri, which is a big thing for him because he was in his comfort zone at Napoli under Sarri, but he's come into a situation where it's a bit hostile and, you know, the fans want Sarri out now after that result tonight and obviously after the 6-0 drubbing that they got at Man City, but I just feel like this current Sarri system, you can't get away with having a centre-forward like Higuain. You need someone who's going to move a little bit more, who's going to create space for the wingers either side. And how Pedro is a professional footballer, I have no fucking idea, because that guy is dreadful.
Do you think that had Higuain went to Chelsea in the summer as opposed to the winter and started the season with them, do you think he would be in better form?
I was about to ask you guys the same question. If it was the way that he left Juventus, or if you think that moving to Milan, not having a good start, really hurt his mentality.
Well, he did have a decent start with us. I think he had like 3 goals in his first 5 or something like that. Or 4.
Yeah, but it took him about 2 games to even get on the score sheet. I think he scored 5 goals in 3 games or something like that. And then
he had an assist against either Roma or Napoli. I can't remember, but he did have an assist early on too, and then And then, yeah, he just kind of disappeared. And
right.
That's why I'm thinking maybe if he had that hot start at Chelsea, where they also had a very hot start to the season. You know, they were started like 9 games unbeaten or something like that, and then that's when it went downhill. So I wonder if, I mean, I'm glad the way things went down, because had he have left and went to Chelsea in the summer, we wouldn't have got Piontek, obviously. He was going to Genoa. Mm. So I'm glad how this all worked out for us, but interesting to think about.
It's one of them that we speculated about when it was all unfolding about, you know, how this could work out better for us, it could work out worse, it was a gamble on our part, but also we're saving a lot of money and salary. And I mean, you know, Chelsea are now lost 3 of the last 5. Of course, Higuain's only fucking goals came against Huddersfield. but literally anyone could score against us at the moment, so it's not a massive...
Everton can't.
Yeah.
Well, Everton is somehow a professional team.
Everton are actually
better. No, but I saw the Genoa director either yesterday or the day prior said that Piontek now is probably worth between 70 and 80. I bet he's kind of kicking himself in the shins over that.
I did an article earlier today, and it was basically... we're recording this on the Monday for those listening. It was today's edition of Gazzetta dello Sport, and they were basically saying that, according to like the opinion of the leadership, Paqueta and Piontek are now worth double what they were when they arrived in the summer. So they were worth like 35 mil each. That's 70. How much we signed them for.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Paqueta deal could reach 45 mil with add-ons, I think, but they're basically valued somewhere in the region of 70 million now each player. And
I think the reason why Piontek is worth double is because when you score so many goals with one team, it's a big gamble if you're going to score it with your new team, and he literally picked up right where he left off. So I think that it just shows that he actually has that skill, and it wasn't the system that he was part of.
Yeah, that's a massive thing, because how much did we talk about, you know, before he signed? You look at the strikers in the league, obviously Belotti's the main one at the moment. Ooh. But like Pavoletti, who funnily enough is now at Cagliari, I think, you know, those players that had really good seasons, and they were talking about paying stupid money for him to go to a big club, and it just didn't work out for whatever reason. I mean, Torino turning down 70 million for Belotti will probably go down as one of the stupidest decisions they make, but he's firing, he's doing the business. Obviously, we've got the Atalanta game to recap after this one, but he's absolutely firing on all cylinders, and it's nice to kind of, for once, have a problem that feels like it's solved, because we've been kind of asking for consistency from a centre-forward for a while now. Cotroni aside,
and I think a lot of it is how well Paqueta complements him. You know, I think one without the other, we wouldn't be in the form that we're in right now, and it goes back to what Madison just said about Piontek doing so well is, you know, Paqueta played a full season in Brazil, was there at the end of the season awards, was the best midfielder, won that award, and then immediately comes to Milan and plays 8 straight games. Like, he hasn't not started since his arrival, and he's, same thing, picked up right where he left off, and I think having both of them is really fixed that problem for us. You know, I don't think having one would have done. And we saw that, you know, when we just had Paqueta and we played Juve in the Copa, in the Super Cup. I mean, obviously that's a tough game, but we didn't score there. Then we get Piontek, and now it's just like, here we go. Here's El Pistolero and I don't know, Mr. Favela. I don't know what Paqueta's nickname is, but he's cool.
Yeah, we need a nickname.
Did you just call him Mr. Favela?
Favela.
Yeah.
Interesting thing.
How much of it comes down to man management? Because like you said, AJ, he's not missed a game, and he started every game in the same position. Is that like the perfect way to adapt to a new league and to new surroundings?
I'd say so. I mean, you're never going to adapt if you don't play. Baptism by fire.
I don't think...
It's not like he had easy games either. His first game was Napoli, Juve, and then Napoli again, or I think it was Juve, Napoli, Napoli, or something like that.
Yeah, back-to-back Napoli games. Yeah, that was it is a baptism of fire, definitely. Maddy, were you expecting him to be this good?
No, at some point, I was expecting it. I was not expecting it to be right off the bat.
This soon,
watching his ball control and watch him flick the ball around the defense, and I mean, his ability to also steal the ball is just unimaginable. I would have never expected it to happen in his first, you know, 10 games as a Milan player. If he had started poor, I was going to, like, personally, I had given him this half season to really get his bearings straight, and I expected him next season to hit the ground running. And he really has just been amazing.
That bodes well as well. Like, normally players do need time to sort of acclimatize and to get used to it. We've seen it with quite a lot of players that have come over that have been hyped. I mean, Gabigol's the obvious one, isn't he? And he just didn't settle at all. But for all those, there's been some that have been successful as well. But yeah, it's encouraging stuff. I mean, obviously, in the Cagliari game, first goal was an own goal. And that's about the only thing that Suso's really contributed recently. But we'll come on to that. The second goal, I need to talk about this guy because I feel like he's gone under the radar a lot recently. But Davide Calabria has been absolutely immense. That cross for the Paqueta goal for the second one against Cagliari, amazing cross. And to be honest, his not just his work going forward, but defensively, he looks so much more solid than he did, you know, last season, or even earlier this season. And he's keeping out Conte, which is a pretty big thing.
I think a part of that also is just recovery. You know, you come back from an injury like that, you're physically healthy and ready to go again, but you're not fit, you're not in shape, and the right back role is obviously one very taxing because you got to run up and down the field box to box practically, and so I think he's just got to get back in shape. Not saying that Calabria isn't challenging that or taking it from him. He absolutely is. I think he's currently the best right back in the league. I don't know who would be a close second if there is one, but it's definitely Calabria hands down at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, he has gone under my radar, I feel like, basically since he was first called up to the team, you know, like a year and a half, 2 years ago maybe. And he just amazes me every time he's on the ball, and I always regret thinking of him as a bench player and not a starter. And I think it's because he looks so small compared to the rest of our defense. But I'm definitely happy with the way that he's able to move up the wing. I feel like him and Suso have good chemistry where they run off the ball on each other, and it's just fantastic.
Yeah, it was under Montella. I mean, this is a thing that he does kind of deserve credit for, Montella. It was under Montella that Calabria first broke through, and of course he was wearing the number 96 shirt, which was kind of mental to see. But he obviously he was an established starter, I would say, at that point in the 2016-17 season, and then he had that ankle injury. But I did an interview for the site with. That he did today, the Milan TV one, and he was talking about Gattuso, and he was basically saying that Gattuso's not just made him, you know, a better player, but has also sort of made him a better man as well. Like, you know, I think mentality wise, he perhaps needed a little bit of a nudging in the right direction because he was making mistakes that I think were down to being a bit naive and being definitely inexperienced, but perhaps not being aggressive in the wrong moments. And I think it's another example of where Gattuso, for as much as he's had criticism for his game management and substitutions and things like that, he appears to be improving players from an individual perspective all the time, which is good stuff. And I reckon he's up there with one of the most improved players this season. And I reckon he's up there, like I say, as one of the most underrated players this season. He's been pretty good. I would give him like a 7.5 out of 10 so far this season.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I think most improved so far has been Donnarumma, personally. I think last season, there's kind of a sour taste in everyone's mouth for the summer before and all the rumors about him leaving. And I think that just kind of distracted him for the entire season, and I think this season he's been by far our best player.
even the first half of the season, he wasn't in good form at all. You know, we didn't have a clean sheet until, what, like 12 games into the season. It was pretty nuts. And right, then he's been obviously unstoppable ever since.
Is that on
him
or is that...
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Is that on our defense? Because...
I think it was both at the
bit
time.
Both, yeah. I mean, it's annoying because obviously you've seen with the Atalanta game, which we'll come on to, he's still got a mistake in him. And I've seen people say, well, he was blindsided, it was a crowded box. He should save that goal against Atalanta. But he's been absolutely incredible. Yeah. As of...
It's only the second goal we've conceded in 2019, so he's still human and he's still a kid. He's allowed one mistake.
Before the Atalanta game, he'd kept 6 clean sheets in his last 9 league appearances.
Yeah, that's
so
amazing.
You cannot. That's an unbelievable start. And another one, which came out today from a place called SofaScore, was that Alessio Romagnoli and Virgil van Dijk are the only two players remaining in Europe's top 5 leagues who've not been dribbled past yet this season, which is pretty nuts.
Yeah, I'd like to see if, you know, who outlasts the other, who makes it the longest. That'd be interesting to see if he could go the whole season without that, because that's a really underrated statistic. You know,
it's like
you
Maldini.
Could still have an incredible game and get dribbled past, but the fact that he's not getting dribbled past, that no one's able to beat him off the ball, you know, they got to do crosses and stuff to get around him and whatnot, is pretty impressive.
It reminds me of that Sir Alex Ferguson quote about Maldini, because Ferguson always wanted to sign Maldini for Manchester United. And obviously he was never going to entertain any offer, but he said he went to watch him once. And he said that Maldini never, ever, like, went to ground, never had to make a slide tackle, never had to make a sliding interception for the whole 90 minutes. His positioning, his awareness was that good. Just nothing got past him. And that is...
I watched an interview with Sir Alex Ferguson not too long ago, and Maldini was there as well. And they had talked about that, and he said, you know, I spoke to Cesare Maldini's dad, and he said, I approached him, and he just shook his head no and said... I was Milan, or he said, my father was Milan, I'm Milan, my son will be Milan for life, and his kids will be Milan. Huh. I thought, that's fucking cool.
Speaking of which, I don't know if you saw the video that we tweeted about Daniel Maldini's goal for the Primavera yesterday.
No, I didn't see it.
It was great.
It's a good finish. Don't get me wrong, it's a good finish. He kind of weaves his way around the back of the defence and picks up a loose ball and, like, slots it into the far corner. But then, obviously, the game's been broadcast live on Milan TV and the camera instantly pans to Paolo, who's, like, stood at the top of some steps. And he's, like, got a massive smile on his face and he's clapping. And then he realised the camera's on him and he just, like, plays it cool. He, like, folds his arms and his smile drops to being, like, this stern expression.
That's what I'm watching it now. Does it? Oh,
it's fantastic, man.
It was really funny to watch.
That's awesome.
You can tell he had his proud dad moment, and then he's like, "No, I've got to go back to being the coolest person on the planet."
Yeah, right.
Do you think if Daniele ever works his way up and gets to the first team, obviously he's not a defender, but do you think he would still take the 3 just in honor of his dad?
No,
you don't think he will?
Well, I hope not. I hope he doesn't. I hope he doesn't. But he's a striker, isn't he? So. Oh, he's a striker / he's a forward. If he takes number 3, that's bad.
I would like him to take the number 9.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to see it. Like, there's just, I don't know, I got a thing against, like, numbers out of place. I'd rather the ugly big numbers, like Donnarumma's, than having, like, wasn't it Chelsea who had a fullback at number 9 for a while? I can't remember who, but that shit's annoying. Like, it shouldn't be that way.
Asamoah Gyan wore number 2 for Sunderland once. That was bad. Yeah, of course, we've had loads of numbers in the 90s as well, which is to do with birth year. I get that, but it's
still
Donnarumma 99 annoys me.
We always have some really weird numbers, I feel like.
Yeah, like
the good news is that trend's going to be done because now all the players coming up are 2000 babies.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. That's a good point. But, like, I understand that people think that... We were having this discussion earlier, actually, Maddie. Like, Cesare wore number 2 and number 5. He wore 2 different numbers for Milan. So it's not like it's just the number 3 that's the Maldini family number. You know, I think 5 could potentially work. Like, Bonaventura wears 5 and he's played as a forward. So
right. That's, well, I was just speaking because they said that it's partially retired unless one of his right. sons mm-hmm. takes it. That's the only way they'd give it. What's, so that's the only reason I
what position
it
does
up.
Christian play? Because he's not good. He's not
he?
With us anymore. Yeah, he's his, not died. Christ.
His team just got beat 20-0.
No, yeah.
But
no,
granted, they only fielded seven players. I mean, you're gonna lose in that situation. True.
Why do they only field
Christian
seven?
Christian Maldini.
That's all they had fit?
No, wait, there's a different... It's... No, Christian Maldini plays for Fano, who were in the same league, but not... It's not the same team that got beat.
Oh, I read that it was the same team. I'm clearly wrong.
No.
But...
Yeah, he plays for a team called... Ooh, they're called Alma Juventus Fano 1906.
I don't like
and
that.
He
I don't like
plays that as a centre-back, so that's number three sorted. We'll sign
yeah,
him.
If he's ever
honestly,
makes it
like,
to our first
he's not
team.
Good.
He's 22. He's 22
yeah,
years old, which is mental.
I'm going to sound ridiculous saying this, but he's too old and too bad of a league to make the cut and wear the three.
I definitely
like,
agree. Unless it's like
definitely.
A... you know when like they honor someone? He plays like an honorary match for his dad if they ever
Christ,
have another honorary match.
Oh. Yeah.
That'd be shocking.
It's just the Maldini family is the entire start 11. They're all
right.
wearing the three.
That would be great, yeah.
Did you guys see Ferguson's going to be managing one testimonial Man U match
mm-hmm.
coming
no,
up
No, that's
here?
Cool, though.
That's cool.
Mm. Have you guys read his biography? Kind of off topic a little bit, but it's very good.
I haven't actually read
it
yet.
I've heard great things. Yeah, I bought it and downloaded like when I was in an airport once, downloaded it to my phone, and then never read it, played games or something. So it's on my phone, I just haven't opened it.
Yeah, if you guys ever get, you know, bored, definitely pick it up. It's a good read.
Mm. Anyway, just to wrap up this Cagliari game, the third goal was, I'm trying to think now, that was the one where Piontek challenged for the ball and he managed to sort of nip into it before the keeper, and then it came out to Çalhanoğlu and it got saved, and then Piontek tucked in the rebound. That was a good finish, actually. I remember it now. That was a good finish.
It was. He nutmegged one of the defenders, I think.
Yeah, it was calm. Just to, rather than sort of centre the opportunity and try and lace it into the top corner, which, you know, could have gone anywhere, you just had the presence of mind to roll it into the bottom corner, and I think that's where someone like Higuain might have been snatching at the opportunity and might have fucked that up.
I felt so bad for
nice.
Çalhanoğlu there. He wants,
yeah, I was gonna
he's
say,
wanted a goal for so long.
Who was it who went over and hugged him?
Kessie.
Was it Kessie?
Yeah.
It was Kessie, yeah.
Yeah, he went over and hugged Çalhanoğlu as if to say he didn't, you know, he needed a goal and he didn't get one. But he got one.
He did.
He got
he
one.
He did.
He got one. So let's talk
Excuse
about
me,
it.
Sorry.
Obviously, Saturday night, we had a massive game trip to the north. Hang on, it's the northeast. It's like 40 miles to the northeast is Bergamo. Against Atalanta, who at the time of kickoff were 1 point below us in the league. In fifth place, we were in fourth place. We knew going into this game that if we won, we'd keep fourth place for the weekend, so it was massive. Then obviously we went 1-0 down. It was that Reino Friula who got the first goal for them. As we've talked about, maybe Donnarumma could have done better. You know, maybe he was blindsided by a bunch of bodies in front of him. But yeah, it went in off the post anyway. And lads, how important was the timing of that equaliser, and how impressive a finish from Piontek was that?
I don't think he meant to even hit it there, honestly. If you look, it hits like lower shin area, like right above his ankle. Mm. I think he was trying to go near post, and it was just the luckiest deflection, and looked so freaking cool that he just rolled with it. He's a gunman.
As someone who
as a gunman
has played up, as someone who has sort of played centre forward a bit, sometimes if a delivery comes in with pace and is quite low, like Rodriguez's did, your instinct is to just put your foot towards the ball. And you're not aiming anywhere in particular, you're just trying to deflect it towards the goal. And, if you're lucky, it goes in either side. The way that looked from Piontek was that it was completely intentional, like with the way that his foot was angled and everything. But I think you're right. I think he's just gone for contact there, and it's gone absolutely perfect. Sometimes when you're red hot, everything goes in.
And that's something that Higuain would not have done. He would not have been in that position. He would have been outside of the box.
He just stood there, you know, and like, thrown his arms as if to say, come on, I can't get into that.
Well, he did that today even, a few times. And granted, every time he did it, I even said, you got Higuain, pass the ball. And then they didn't. Mm. But still, like, Higuain would not have been there. Mm. Piontek got just beautiful, beautiful goal. It was magic. And then it was, what would you say, uphill, downhill? I don't know. It was streamlined from there. It was all good. Why is uphill and downhill both bad expressions?
Yeah,
I'd say uphill's
all
good
downhill. All downhill from there is no, that's bad.
Yeah,
that's as if like you
uphill's good.
All uphill makes it sound like it's a struggle.
Yeah, it's an uphill battle.
It was all downhill from there.
It was
there.
Good.
Yeah,
second half was good.
Yeah, it was good.
good.
Things turned upwards from there. There we go. Well, actually, we started the second half on the back foot a little bit, and we managed to get them against the run of play again. This was fantastic, though. Like, a ball came in, Atalanta defender cleared it, and you could tell my stream was sort of a bit all over the place with the camera positioning, and Calhanoglu was off frame at the time, but you could tell by the groans from the Atalanta fans that he'd hit that clearance straight to him. And then he comes into the frame, and he takes that touch, and he just absolutely thundercunts it into the bottom corner. Absolutely incredible strike, man. Like, the technique to do something like that. Don't get me wrong, if he does that 10 more times, maybe he puts it in the crowd, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the shot that he's been trying all season, and it's finally worked. It finally went in. And, you know, like, those are the goals that we saw him score last season. Just those, I just feel like those bullet shots. And he went right over to Gattuso and the team on the bench and just celebrated. And you could tell that he was just so relieved. And I feel like the rest of that game, he was playing with the pressure off of his shoulders because he had finally broken through and scored.
Yeah.
Unlocked potential, yeah. And he even posted on his Instagram that he his picture, like, to celebrate the goal after the game was him hugging Gattuso, which speaks volume to the impact that he has, like, the just a figure that he is in the locker room, you know, a coach, a motivator, almost a father figure for these guys, because at the end of the day, they are still young kids, you know, so it's really cool to see that.
I mean,
and then the third goal was awesome, too. It was our first set-piece goal that we've scored in...
Since Bonucci.
I don't know, it seems like four seasons. Yeah, it was since Bonucci,
actually. Yeah, that's almost a year now since Bonucci scored that header from the corner at Juventus. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was mid-March last year.
That was, again... I know I keep going on about it, but if you watch Piontek's movements for all his goals, not even his goals, but just the chances that we create, it is so, so smart. Like, he knows how to fake a man with like a shoulder dip and then dart to the near post. And he did that for the corner. You know, he did that for the equalising goal as well. That's how he managed to get to that ball, just sort of in front of the penalty spot. You know, I'm sure he's done it countless times at Genoa, but none that I can really name offhand. But his movement's so intelligent. The ball from Hakan from the corner was nuts, don't get me wrong. It was a perfect corner, and we've been lacking in corners. You know, I did at the halfway stage of the season, I did a statistical analysis of where we are on various markers, and set pieces appears to be our downfall. I think that's only like our third set piece goal all season. It might actually only be our second set piece goal all season, but it's some encouragement at least that, you know, going forward we can score a few more of them.
Mm-hmm.
And just going back to Calhanoglu, I think it was a massive, massive indicator that when he scored, he ran over to Gattuso, because we talked about Gattuso's man management before, the way that he handles certain players in the media. Bakayoko was a fine example of how he's not afraid to pull punches. When he wasn't performing well, he challenged him to get better, as simple as that, and basically threatened to send him back if he didn't start performing, and that worked a charm. But with Calhanoglu, I think he's acknowledged Gattuso that he's a confidence player, and sometimes he will need an arm around him just to say, look, you'd need something to kickstart you, but once you get going, I've got faith in you to deliver consistently. He sheltered him from criticism when everyone was having a pop at him, myself included. You know, it's okay when things aren't going your way, you're getting unlucky bounces, but when you don't look arsed, when you look like you're kind of, you know, jogging around the pitch at 70%, that's when it becomes difficult to take, even when the team's doing well. But that was a determined performance against Atalanta. He struggled a bit at the start, but once he got that goal, it was like the Hakan that we saw at the start and the one that we bought. So I'm buzzing for him, and we need more of that moving forward. You know, next thing is for him to score a free kick.
Eventually.
So, all right. Quite the rant there.
Yeah,
but it was all good stuff.
I know. Yes, yeah, so that's it. That's a 3-1 win against Atalanta. Biggest win of the season?
I think Napoli and Coppa Italia was bigger.
I think it's... I don't know. It's tough. I mean, the Roma game in the first half of the season was massive to get the season going.
That was the
going.
Second game of the season.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a big team.
Yeah.
If we didn't win that, they'd be ahead of us right now.
Yeah, very good point. It just feels like, you know, that was ages ago.
It was
round three, though, obviously, because the Genoa game to start the season had been postponed. I kind of feel like that Genoa game away when we won 2-0 was a massive win as well for us. The one where it was played on like a Monday afternoon because of security fears. Like, because we've been in such a rut and things seem bad, and we just went and got a routine 3 points, and it was like, right, that needs to be the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And to this point, it's proved to be the Kickstarter.
Well, and that was like the big thing too, was, you know, having the game in hand. So everyone's like, there's a game in hand. And then our form was bad, and it was like, great, now we got a game in hand that we're going to lose. And then we didn't, and I think that kind of, well, I don't know if I'd say that was a turning point, because obviously things kind of went south again after that, but it definitely was a massive 3 points. But
I mean,
you're right, I've always said that Atalanta is the toughest game of the season. Well, not always, but I've been saying that since the beginning of this year. They've scored more goals than anyone, barring Juventus, because of this week. But at the start of this week, they had scored more. They concede a bit, but they're a tough team, and they definitely put it on. We just took advantage of our chances.
They seem to thrive on, like, I mentioned it in like the podcast where we previewed it. They seem to thrive on playing us to Atalanta. Our record there is pretty horrendous. Or it feels like it is anyway. They seem to always have the better of us. I think we haven't scored against them at home in 3 games in a row now, which is pretty bad as well. Gasperini seems to kind of have our number on that, but it was nice to put the demons to bed and in terms of a statement win, it felt like at 1-0 down with Atalanta on top, and as it stood them going 2 points above us, it was like, Christ, this could be a bad turning point in our season. Like, this is the first big test and we might come unstuck. But yeah, it was massive, that. Romagnoli and Mustaccio were really, really good in that game as well, by the way. We had to keep Duvan Zapata quiet, and we had to keep Papu Gomez quiet. He really is a crafty little shit.
And props to Mustaccio for bouncing back, because I believe that we won that Roma game if it wasn't for his mistake.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, he didn't let it get to him, and he's had 2 good performances since then, is pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we've got Empoli on Friday night. I'm actually really looking forward to us having a Friday night game. I don't know why, it's like a cool way to start off the weekend, hopefully with 3 points. So that's coming this Friday, and I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, obviously. We've got Lazio then the following midweek, 26th of February, in the Coppa Italia semi-final, first leg. Now, anything could happen in that game for me. It's a bit of a stab in the dark. I would like to say we get a draw. I think if we bring a draw back to San Siro, I'd back us in the second leg to do it. I don't know about
you. Yeah, I agree. If we get any point in the second leg, I think, or in the first leg, I think we go through.
Yeah, I think that we're going to win that first leg. I think that Lazio have not been playing well at all. And I think that we're going to be able to take advantage of that, even with the form that we've had.
I hope so. I mean, it's going to be difficult because obviously Lazio hate us. The fans are going to be well up for it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be up for bouncing back. Hang on, let me just see what their league game is. But they're going to be up for bouncing back as well after that late capitulation that they had at Genoa, which was a great result for us. That's put them off the pace again.
They,
oh my god!
They don't have a league game.
Lazio's next six games are mental. They've got Sevilla away in the Europa League on Thursday.
Which they already are down 1-0, one away going
ahead. That's not too bad. Like, that's salvageable. So they'll go there wanting to win. Mm-hmm. Then they've got us. Then they've got Roma in the derby. Then they've got Fiorentina away. Then they've got Parma at home. Then they've got Inter away. So this is a make or break part of the season for Lazio. And the cup game maybe kind of takes a back seat.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it doesn't get any easier for them either. I mean, they get, after Inter, they get a little bit of a break, but then they play us in the league, and then again in the cup 10 days later. So it's mad, they got a murder's row of games to finish out the season, whereas most of our tough games are behind us. I mean, we have the Derby this month or next month, and we have Juve, but for the most part, I mean,
yeah,
we can potentially win another like 11 games out of the ones that we have left. You know, I don't want to get crazy, but they're not difficult.
I mean, I'm looking here at our next sort of five league games. Empoli, you know, you don't underestimate any opponent, especially given how things have been for us in recent seasons. Fixtures like that have been our downfall, like drawing or even losing by an odd goal at home to teams like that. They've been what's been the difference for us between fighting for the top four and, you know, fighting for the Europa League. But then Sassuolo at home, that's going to be a difficult game. You know, we never seem to beat them easily at home. Chievo away, they're kind of...
That's the easiest game of the season, in my opinion.
Chievo are rock bottom. They're really struggling, man. They've only got 9 points. They're worse than Huddersfield.
Yeah, that's the easiest game of the season. I think we win that 4-0.
Whoa. Yeah, maybe. But the thing, the beauty of that is that, you know... Like I said, I hate getting too far ahead of myself, but ideal situation, we take 3 wins out of 3 there going into the derby. We're probably above Inter by that point.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, with the Icardi drama.
Yeah.
That's so funny what's going on with him. But then we play Sampdoria, Udinese, Juve. I'm not confident we're going to beat Juve. We might be able to salvage a point. But then if those three games that we were talking about don't go according to plan... That Lazio game on April 14th is a must win. It should be a must win anyway to put more distance between us. But
I kind of like the way our schedule is this season, purely because we seem to have like blocks of sort of three winnable games, then a tough game. So it allows us to build a little bit of momentum,
right.
and then we can go into these, like the Atalanta game. You know, we had nice momentum going into that, and we got 3 points. Mm-hmm. So you got to back us. I mean, like Inter, for example, if we play like we can and if we play like we have, we're clinical, we get, you know, get the ball into dangerous areas, there's no reason we can't beat them at home. But the derby's the derby, and form obviously goes out the window for that. Samp away is a tough game. So, yeah, don't want to look too far ahead, but it's a really interesting time in the season.
It's nice being positive, you know?
It's so nice playing positive.
It's like a long time since we recorded an episode where we'd won like all the games in it. I mean, I know it's only two.
Our last league loss was before Christmas. Yeah. It was the 22nd of December.
Uh-huh. I remember feeling crap like going into Christmas about the chances for the team.
Yeah.
Bottle top four again. You know, Higuain wasn't scoring. It was like, well, it had all gone to shit. But it's nice to be where we are now. We just got to keep it up, because too often we've fallen away when the going gets tough. So
yeah, but I feel like we've always fallen before this point of the season, and this is the best soccer I've seen us play in like 3 or 4 years. Season
soccer.
I know. I was deciding on whether or not I should say soccer or football, but I'm in America, so
culture.
I have not seen us play this good in a very long time. This is dominating.
Mm. We seem to have a style, like, we press when we haven't got the ball, but we press intelligently, we don't go too far over the top now. Obviously, we've got Bakayoko, who covers basically the size of Russia, something like that, in every game, because he's just fucking a great engine on him. And then, obviously, we've got Kessie, who's box-to-box. His end product isn't really there at the moment, but can you imagine if he gets a couple of goals in the next couple of games, all of a sudden we've got another threat there. Then the front three is the front three. Paqueta feeding those. It's just a nice... it's nice to have. And then all the while you've got Castillejo on the bench, who I'd almost forgotten played for us. You've got Cotrone to come in when Piontek's not feeling too fresh, and obviously you can fill in out wide as well. So it's nice. It's nice to have options. And yeah, it's all good. Yeah, so looking ahead to next season, I don't know if you guys have seen the leaked kits that came out.
I have.
Maddie?
I think they're beautiful.
I personally am not a fan of the home kit.
Right, AJ, we'll go with you first. Or the like, third. Go through the three and tell me what you like and what you don't like.
So the home kit, it looks like our old school classic kits. It's just a regular shirt with a crew cut collar, you know, no V-neck or collar, anything like that, just crew neck. But it's very thin stripes, and it covers everything, the sleeves as well. I just don't like the thin. I know it's a classic look, and it's really liked by a lot of the fans. Mm-hmm. I don't dislike it. It's just not my favorite. Mm. I like it more than this year's home kit, I'd say.
I mean, you were saying that your favorite home kit is like last year's Adidas kit, or Adidas kit.
Yeah, which is very similar to that one, but it has the more modern, thicker stripe, yeah, which I do enjoy.
Slightly darker red as well, but...
I believe so, yeah. I really like the away kit. It was just, you know, white, just clean, but it had a black Puma logo and a red shirt sponsor for the Fly Emirates, mm-hmm, which was nice. And it had black and red stripes on the shoulders going on the top, which was a nice touch. I like it when they're simple, the away kit. Simple with just a very subtle way to implement black and red, you know, our colors, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think it looked great. And then the third kit was weird. It looked like it was a black shirt, and they let a toddler draw like red squiggly lines everywhere. I'll be passing on that one, I think.
Yeah.
Maddie, go on. What are your thoughts on the three?
The first kit is one of the most beautiful jerseys I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
The thin stripes, for one, will make me look a little thinner. And two... it is just beautiful. I love the pinstripe look. It is just a classic kit, and it is a great statement to try and win the league next season in a nice classic kit. I don't really like the black collar. I wish it would have had like a V-neck with a button and a collar on it, but I didn't design the kits. I buy the kits. The mm-hmm. other two, I could really care less about. I don't like the red and black on the shoulders of the away kit. Like AJ said, I like the away kit, just very simple. But I still like it. I like the red and black on the inside of the collar and in the back. I think that's kind of cool. And the third kit is just horrendously ugly. I have never liked our third kits. I think they all look weird, like this one does. With looks like someone took their fingers and just with red paint and just scratched along it.
Has anyone got the picture up of the home shirt?
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
No.
Well, you know how like the collar's got the black, it's got a black collar, yep, basically, round neck collar. It's not got it on the end of the sleeves, and now I've noticed it's really bugging me.
You know, I saw a different...
Yeah, I wish it had it on the sleeves too.
I saw a different picture that had it on the sleeves, so when I was... Right. Looking at it now, I was surprised I didn't see it, but I still like it.
Yeah. I mean, for me, that my favorite home shirt in probably my entire time supporting the club, so like 10, whatever, however many years, was the one that we had in 2011-12. The one with the thin stripes. I think that looked really, really nice. And it reminds me of a time when it was actually fun to watch us. Obviously, we'd won the Scudetto the previous season. Yeah. We had Ibrahimovic, El Shaarawy, you know, Rubinho. It was just a... Mech says when he was, like, kicking everyone's heads in.
I think that's the year... Fun... Didn't we play Barca in the quarterfinals?
Boateng.
Of the Champions League?
Yeah, with the Niang hit the post or whatever.
I don't think that... I think that was the foul.
2013-14, we beat Barca 2-0 at home.
And then they beat us 4-0 in return.
Wait, hang on. Montari. Can't remember who scored.
But I remember this jersey because...
It was Pato, wasn't it? Pato had one
Yeah,
instantly.
It was right before the Champions League game against Barcelona. And I went out on a whim and just bought a jersey, and then I had this one. But it's the only jersey I've actually ever bought off the AC Milan website, because they're always stupid expensive.
Yeah, man, yeah. But yeah, that was a really nice kit set in 2011-12. I mean, regardless of if you like the home shirt, AJ, you must really like the away shirt from that year. That one was like all white with a red and black vertical stripe that went through the badge. You know, like on
yeah,
one side.
Yeah, I love that one. That one's fantastic.
And then the away shirt was the black one, and it had like the thin Italian flag across it, and the badge was in gold. That was like one of our
I'm a big fan of the gold, man. When Donnarumma had the gold goalkeeper jersey, that one was my favorite that he's worn, and it reminds me of that third kit that we had that was gold when Balotelli was around, that's my favorite.
With the pocket.
Favorite kit. Yeah, I love that.
I feel like gold's got the flag on it. Third colour, really.
You know, it should be.
Gold. Obviously, it's white, really, but still. I like the home shirt. It's a nod to a time that was fun. And I like the thin stripes, because if you go back to the teams from the 60s and the 70s, when we had our initial kind of period of success, they wore the thin stripes, like Gianni Rivera, you know, even Cesare wore it, I think. So I like that. I think it's cool. White. It looks like it's going to be white shorts and white socks as well with that, which is a massive thing for me. We should always wear white shorts and white socks with our home shirts. I think that's a big deal. It makes us look cool. It's really hard to fuck up our away shirts because of the trend that's been set of them being white with some kind of detail to make them a little bit different from the last ones. But with this Puma design, I think it's kind of like it is on the borderline of looking like a training shirt. That's my minor criticism. But I like the fact that it's got red on one side, black on the other. And I kind of like, even though you'll never see it, you know, because it's on the inside, the like the red and black stripes on the inside of the back collar. That looks pretty nice as well. And that's going to be an all-white kit as well, which is nice. Then a third shirt, I'm going to be honest, this does look like a training shirt. Because we've had training shirts in recent years that have basically just been plain, but they've had some kind of pattern on them.
That's what I thought it was when I first saw it, honestly.
Oh, have you seen the training shirts?
They're really, for next year?
Yeah.
I didn't even know what they've
Those are released as well.
I'll link you them quickly so you can pull it up. They're not that different to this year's, really, because I think Puma are just kind of, they are what they are, you know, they have templates and they give them to every team, but I've just linked them to you. If you haven't seen it yet, basically
the dark one looks like this year's third kit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that white one a lot, though.
The black one is basically this year's third kit, as far as I'm concerned. But the white
I have it on now, and it's identical.
The white one with the red looks cool. But I've got a jacket, this year's jacket, which is black, and it's kind of got similar patterning down the sides.
On the sleeve, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't think they're branching out too much. They're sticking with the... I don't even know what that design's meant to be honest. It's just lines and kind of weird shapes that are dark in colour, but...
it's weird.
It's cool. I kind of like the third shirt, I'm going to be honest. I liked the one that we had last season, though. The black that kind of had the arrows across the chest.
The last...
Oh, yeah.
Third kit that I actually liked... In fact, I sent you guys a screenshot, I think, in the chat, was just the all-black kit with the Italian flag colors across the chest and, like, those thin striped lines.
Yeah, that was the 2011-12 season.
Yeah, that was my favorite one. Nice.
Yeah. We've had some bad ones, though, man. Remember the one in 2014-15 that was, like... greeny yellow.
Yes.
With like dark
green. Oh, the Rasta one.
Yeah, that was horrific. I never
That one looked more like pajamas.
I never actually bought that one. I had the other two from that year, but I never bought
Alex Viola bought the shorts and wore them as
swim. You're talking about the 2015-16, right? With the yellow stripes on the side?
I'm talking about the 14-15, which was like custard coloured. It was like a horrible manky yellow colour.
Yes, okay, I'm looking at that one now. Yeah.
Yeah. But I know the one you're on about the season after was green, dark green with yellow.
Oh, with the white, yeah. White sleeves?
Yeah. That was the
I
one
I like that one, honestly. I know nobody liked it, but I liked it.
I liked it. I hated it. The red on it actually works surprisingly well.
That year's home shirt, it was made out of like a recycled material and it was really thick.
There was just way too much black on that shirt.
I think I really liked that shirt, but I never bought it. I don't think. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The one where it's just all black in the back, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked the way it looked because it was the first one that had our actual logo on it in quite some time, but I never bought it. I got a knockoff one in the mall, I think.
They did, like, for some reason, so they made it a black back, and you think, oh, great, they'll actually, you know, put some white numbering on it. They made the numbers, like, fucking silver or something. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't look right.
It was weird.
You couldn't even see on camera who was who. It was a bit strange. But, of course, we beat Juve in that kit, so it's got some happy memories. Some happy memories. Yeah, and then we had that weird period just before that where we had the flag of Milan, basically, as our crest, which most people thought was the English flag. Which is kind of a nod to the English flag because the city of Milan was founded by Englishmen, the club was founded by an Englishman. But yeah, it's actually just the coat of arms of the city of Milan, and I kind of liked us wearing that because I thought it was a bit of an up yours to Inter. It looked kind of weird though. Not
I forgot all about that yellow kit you were just. I just looked it up. The 14-15.
Yeah,
I forgot that one existed. I bought the away kit because I liked Milan the Casa logo. Milan logo. I thought it was cool. But
I mean,
that was it.
That was the peak of banter era. But I'm telling you now, that's the most fun I've had watching us in a while, because you never know which version of us was going to turn up. We were like, Honda was top scorer after four games or something. We were flying, mm-hmm. Then we absolutely fell apart. But Menez emerged out of it at the end of the season, was just banging him in for fun.
Mm-hmm.
That was just a fun season, man. If we'd have been recording that the podcast
was wait,
then,
so what was the Rasta one then? Was that the Rasta one?
No, the Rasta one was the season after that?
You're right, yeah, 15-16 yeah. Was Rasta.
Yeah, that was crazy. That was the one that, yeah, the beach shorts, wasn't it? That was the one that I remember us being 3-0 up after like half an hour against Udinese. And then they pulled it back to 3-2. Just remember those ridiculous shorts, man. Oh my god. Yeah. So yeah, that's pretty cool. We'll see if those kits actually... I mean, want to stress, they are leaks, but footy headlines are usually pretty good when it comes to that kind of thing.
Yeah, I feel like in the past they've been pretty predictable.
I mean, they're pretty detailed sort of renders of them as well, as if they know exactly what they are. So
the shorts of that year's kits just popped up in my Google images and I couldn't help but laugh.
It's jokes, man. Couple of bits of Mercato news. We've been linked with obviously Saint-Maximin, I guess that's how you say it. And apparently he's gone on strike. Obviously we made a late attempt to try and sign him in January. From Nice, Patrick Vieira is the manager there, and apparently Nice are like kind of happy about how we went about it. We didn't put too much pressure on them to make a decision there and then. We made a decent financial offer, but they decided not to sell. But ever since then, it seems to have gone downhill, and he didn't play on Saturday, and now it seems
He's claiming he had an ankle injury, but Vieri publicly said that he was faking an injury. Mm-hmm. And said it was a fever, and then that's when he replied, no, it's not a fever, it's an ankle injury.
Yeah.
But, so I don't know who to believe, usually...
There's been a breakdown there, I think. Yeah. I've seen Dortmund have come in for him, but I've seen a few sort of highlight videos of Saint-Maximin. He looks good to say he's 21.
Yeah, for sure.
And we need a winger. So,
and he wears a Gucci headband during the game. I'm all for it.
Yeah, man.
Do you know what's kind of nice?
I looked at some recent pictures of him, and he hasn't worn one recently. That's a bit crap, but anyway.
It sucks to be a Nice fan in this situation, but to have players like come out and, I guess it's kind of childish to act like this, but to act like this because they want to join the club. Same with De La Feu when like his agent comes out and speaks about how You know, he's...
That was bad.
Yeah, that was bad, but I'm all for
middle of the season, that was bad.
Yeah. And
because we were only going for him... This sounds bad because I liked Deulofeu when he was here, but we were only going for him out of desperation, really. He was one of our last sort of, you know, we went for Carrasco, we were in for Saint-Maximin, you know, we were linked with Bergwijn from PSV, and then we sort of fell into these Deulofeu rumours. Don't think he was ever seriously going to come despite a late attempt. And now his agent's just come out, and basically Watford fans must be fuming about that.
Right.
Halfway through the season, straight after the transfer window shuts, you think, right, we've hung on to our star player. And then it's like, no, he wanted to go. So bad.
Well, how long did you really think he was going to stay at Watford for?
He's too good for them. I mean,
I think he's going to stay there for a while. I think he's good, but I don't think he was ever really good. I think he was a good mark on a poor team, and that's why people enjoyed him with us, but I don't think he was.
I think
Barcelona bought him back based on his spell with us.
Yeah, his best spurt as a player was when he was playing with us.
Yeah. I saw him earlier in the season for Watford when he played against Huddersfield. We got beaten in that game. He scored a goal where he basically dropped one of our players and then just thumped it in. That was a sick goal, but we were talking to a couple of Watford fans and they were saying, we had no idea how we managed to bring him in, but he's on a loan, you know, he's here.
Oh, he's on a loan? So.
Is he on loan from Barcelona, or where's he on loan from?
I'm fairly sure he's on loan.
I thought.
Hang on, let me.
Watford had purchased.
I thought it was a permanent move.
For sure.
How much? Hang on. Oh, he was on loan at Watford last season, and they brought him in permanently.
Right.
Last summer.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so that makes more sense. So yeah, he was on a loan. 13 million euros they ended up paying for him.
God, that's so crazy.
It's quite cheap, that, but
right.
He's only 24 and he's got some serious experience under his belt. I mean, he's actually played for the Spanish national team. So So I don't know what'll happen with him. But interestingly, I don't know if you guys saw the Andres Silva interview
that was
last
weird.
Week. Very weird. He's done it before. You know, he's kind of hinted at he's not closed the door to coming back, basically.
I think every time he speaks to the media, he's opening it up more and more.
Yeah. I think he's looking at it because he started with Sevilla really well this season. You know, he was firing in goals. He started well. But since then, things have been pretty bad. From what I gather, he hasn't scored in a while. He's kind of been relegated to, like, third-choice striker. And I'm not surprised that... that he's now seemingly, you know, kept that door firmly open for return. Because I think that when you're playing a 4-3-3 and you've only got one centre forward, you can get away with having two options. But of course, if we were to suffer an injury to one of Piontek or Cotrone, you know, touch wood, we don't. But if one of them goes down injured, people will start saying, oh, why didn't we have a third striker? You know, it seems like a bit of an oversight then. And I think you can do worse than Andres Silva as a guy who's fighting for that backup position.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to play third fiddle. In his interview, he made it sound like, I'm only going to go back if I have playing time. Like, do you really think you're going to start over Piontek and Cotrone? No.
He might fancy playing in the Champions League, though. Again, because obviously he did it with Porto. I wonder if he's just keeping that option open for if we're in the Champions League, because he will get Champions League minutes, I would think.
Yeah, unless... I guess we'd be in three competitions.
Let me just have a look. That's what I mean, is that obviously we're in the Europa League this season, but I just feel like having three strikers is a nice insurance blanket.
We definitely need three, for sure.
Yeah,
I just don't know if Andre Silva is the right third.
He wouldn't take being third.
No.
So Andre Silva did actually start their last game. They played two up front, didn't score. They lost 3-0.
He got real close a few times.
Oh, did you watch it?
I did, actually, yeah, because people on the timeline were saying that Andre Silva was the worst striker at Sevilla, and I was like, huh, I'm going to watch and then tweet when he scores. Mm-hmm. He didn't score. No. But he got real close a few times.
Yeah. Kind of mad. I'm just getting up. So he scored 9 league goals in 23 appearances this season, which isn't too bad. 220 minutes per goal. However, he's scored 1 goal since December the 16th. And he's only scored... Whoa, he's only scored 2 goals since the 7th of October. So yeah, he scored a hat-trick, first game of the season, which is mental. He scored a couple against Real Madrid in September. Then it's just, yeah, he's fallen off. Seems to be getting minutes consistently though, which is... It was made out like he was a backup, but yeah, he's not kept the door shut anyway, and we'll see how the situation develops, I guess. So yeah,
absolutely.
That's it, boys. Have you got anything else to add? Anything else you want to discuss?
Yeah, I been waiting for you to tell us the story a little bit. You got a package in the mail like 3 months ago. I want you to tell us about it.
Yeah, I mean, I knew this package was arriving, but I didn't know when, I didn't know on what day. So I get a knock at the door, and I see that the delivery van's pulled up at the bottom of our driveway. And it's this huge box. Like, I knew I was getting the parcel from you, Maddie, and I knew what was in it, but I wasn't expecting it to be that big a box. Anyway, so he hands me this box. I sort of, like, put it down on the floor because I have to sign for it because it's come, like, signed for delivery. And I look at the top of the box, and there is a picture of my face photoshopped over a giraffe. And the guy, as he went to take my signature, asked for my name so he could verify that the parcel was mine. He took one look down at the picture on the top that you taped onto the box. He looked up at me, back at the picture, and back at me and said, "Yeah, I know it's you." So that was the identification part done. So then I signed for it, yeah, and got 3 bobbleheads, a calendar, and a pocket schedule. So
that was sick. Man, I love that story.
It was, oh God. I wasn't expecting that. That was the funny thing, man.
AJ, so, yeah. AJ helped me out a lot there. He's the one who sent me the picture and everything, so.
Yeah, I actually made that picture.
It was jokes. Yeah.
I had it saved already just because. Mm. And when Maddie messaged me and he said, can you make me a picture of Oliver on a giraffe's head? Mm. I said, already got one, and sent it like 3 seconds later. I knew exactly where it was saved.
So backstory for those people who don't know, I don't know if my nickname in the chat is still Giraffe Neck, but basically there's a photo of me that got taken, and admittedly my neck looks really long in it. It's from like 2016. It was the season that Huddersfield got promoted. That was the picture. And yeah, my neck looks really long, and I think it is probably larger than normal anyway. But it certainly looks worse in that photo. So I've had the nickname Giraffe Neck ever since. And the beauty of it is when you start thinking about the amount of people that saw that package as it went across the right. world.
Well, the best
and
part.
Thought, who the fuck is this guy?
The best part was when I dropped it off at the post office, she looked at it and she put all the markings to send it on the side. And I was like, oh, thank you so much for not ruining that beautiful picture. You know? It was good. Wow.
Yeah, fair play, mate. I'm going to give you full marks for that because that gave me a right chuckle. And also, the stuff that was in it was sick. So. Buzzing.
All right. Well, I think that wraps it up, eh, boys?
Yeah, just over an hour. That's a good effort. It's a good effort. Yeah, that's it. I think we'll record in about a week's time, won't we?
Yeah. Then
recap the Empoli game. We're going to get into a schedule now of doing it every Monday night because, admittedly, we've been a bit flaky with it.
We have.
But we seem to have sorted out the work schedules. Obviously, there's a bit of a time difference because you've got AJ who's over in the Midwest. Wait, no.
I'm full West Coast.
I'm Midwest. What are you talking about?
You're Midwest. But you're like
West Coast, best coast.
You're like 3 hours ahead, aren't you, of AJ?
Two.
And then I'm like 5
but
hours.
But that actually
ahead
changes mid March, and it'll be 3 hours.
Daylight saving.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we've got it locked down. So we'll go to weekly Monday recording, which is good. Keeps us on the straight and narrow.
Yeah, absolutely does.
Yeah. So just before I end it here, I want to send a special thank you to our sponsors once again, Euro Fantasy League. Make sure to check out their website, eurofantasyleague.com, to join in on the fun. And once again, check the pinned tweet on our Twitter for more details of how to get involved in that. And of course, a reminder to download our app if you haven't already. It's available on the Apple App Store and Google Play Store and Android Store, whatever stores that are out there now. And give us your feedback on social media if there's anything you'd like adding to it, because it's still in development, really. So, yeah, let us know what you think of it. And in the meantime, I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. I've been joined by Anthony Torgrud.
Yeah, I've been your host, Anthony Torgrud. you can find me on Twitter at Torgrud45. And we've been joined by a special guest who's not a regular on the series whatsoever, Madison.
Well, I guess we're all hosting, huh? It's been a pleasure hosting this podcast with you guys. You guys can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Madison_DT.
Yes, and just one more shout out before I finish, to follow our account for various goal highlights that you'll find during the games. It's at Milan GIFs. So yeah, if you want to see some goals, hopefully some more goals in the near future, then give that a follow. And thank you very much everyone for listening, and we'll catch you in a week's time.
Patrick, bye. Mettila in mezzo, Patrick. Palla nostra, Suso, tira Alessio, Suso, tira. Perché non tiriamo? Ma perché non tiriamo? Gol! Alessio Romagnoli, gol! Alessio Romagnoli! Alessio! Il gol del capitano ancora! Ancora l'ultimo, come Gilardino, detto ieri in conferenza.